Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilp.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks.
And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to another show.
Another episode of the show.
At one point, I tried to call them issues.
There you go.
Because
that
it's
works.
Cool. Like it's an issue of a comic book.
Issue of comic books.
Hey Kids Comics. Yep.
Yep.
I'm Dan.
I'm Martin.
And we got a special guest here.
Tony.
Tony, who stays well away from his mic.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll get closer.
There you go. Get it. Caress that bad boy.
It looks like somebody's tried gnawing on this microphone cover.
That's Sam's mic.
Oh. Yeah, you got to get close to that bad boy.
Can I get like a plastic drop sheet for this, actually?
Filling in for Sam, Tony.
Tony.
Yes.
Tony.
Can I actually fill in for Sam? Is that possible?
Sure, why not?
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you have to say some mildly offensive stuff.
Oh, I can do that easy.
Interrupt when we're talking about other stuff.
Take the Lord's name in vain a lot.
Oh, Jesus Christ, really?
Yeah.
I just don't know if I can talk about Archie like Sam does.
Yeah, what are we going to do? We won't have a Luann segment without Sam.
I'm sure we'll have two next week.
We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I'm sure we can
come up with
something. Yeah.
We'll see how it goes between the colds that are running around and there's a...
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have a cold.
Excuse me. There's a puppy in the booth here and I'm allergic as all heck to dogs, so I didn't take any allergy pills. So if I suddenly start sounding like this, then we know why.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be one for the... don't listen to this one in headphones.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're just going to hear scratchy... nasally terribleness.
There we go. Hey, comic books. Let's talk about comic books. Should we talk about comic books?
Okay, sure.
So some sales figures came out recently. They were talking about Diamond and stuff like that. So I kind of printed off a few, being a little analytical as I am, I printed off a few charts and stuff like that of what I have been buying, what I haven't been buying. So I guess last month's top 10 comics. Number one was Batman number 6. Number two was All-Star Batman number 2. Number 3 was Batman number 7. So number 4 was Civil War 2 number 5. That's not confusing. Number 5 was Justice League number 4. Number 6 was Walking Dead 158. Number 7 was Trinity number 1, which is the new Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman comic.
Okay.
Supergirl number 1, Suicide Squad number 2, and Justice League number 5. Do you know what's missing from that list?
Marvel.
Yeah.
Independence.
Like Civil War. That's it. There's no other Marvel book on this list.
Right.
Star Wars isn't even on this list. Star Wars has been on the top 10 for the past little while.
What's up with that? Because I'd rather read Star Wars way more than I would want to read All-Star Batman or Suicide Squad.
Well, like I said, the Star Wars books have been in the top 10 for quite a few months, so I'm not sure what exactly happened there. I'm getting the Star Wars book, and I think it's pretty good, so I don't know if maybe they were down an issue. I don't have 11 through 25, so I can't tell you if it's like sitting at number 11, but it's kind of surprising that, it's devoid. It's all DC.
Go Johnny DC.
Well, DC and Walking Dead, right?
Yeah.
So Walking Dead's always
does not
sure.
Walking Dead, does that always make the top 10, though?
I don't think it always makes the top 10, but it's pretty close.
It's like I think the last couple times we've talked about the ratings, it hasn't been that high. But
exactly.
It is like they have sort of an event going on, too.
No, I'm not reading Walking
Alpha
Dead.
War.
Yeah, I'm not reading Walking Dead. So is there something special about 158? Or
nothing specifically
It comes after
special.
157?
Yeah, exactly.
And 157 was the start of their like sort of mini event where, you know, unlike Marvel and DC, it's all contained within the same book.
How can you have a mini event with a zombie storyline? Like, it's the end of the fucking world. You have zombies all over. How do you go from having zombies
they're
trying to eat your eyeballs to a mini event? How do you, like, you can't go back in the size of the event and make the zombies less.
I would call it a storyline. They're in the middle of a story. I don't know if I'd call it an event.
But. Right.
But it is.
Sorry,
it is
a program that every story that has a part number is an event now.
But it does. It is like a significant storyline. Like sometimes it's just this is us. This is the life and times of dealing with the apocalypse.
Right.
A little bit more in depth. Right.
They've made some enemies, and now those enemies are coming after them. So that's what's happening right now.
Yeah. Right. So I'm gonna ask you guys a question because I really don't read new comics anymore. I gave up on new comics quite a while ago, as you guys know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm mainly a Golden and Silver Age collector.
Yep.
How often are the new releases influenced by the still steady slew of, you know, DC and Marvel movies, comic book movies?
How much is that influencing?
Is there still enough young readership these days?
Oh, I think so. Because like, Supergirl number one is on the list, right at number 8, and they've pretty much number 2 has come out since then, and I've read both, and they've pretty much completely rejiggered the Supergirl comic to mirror the TV show.
Right.
You know. Cat Grant is no longer in charge of the Daily Planet like she was in the previous series. Now she's Catco Enterprises, which is exactly what she is in the TV show.
TV show, right.
You know, Supergirl now has foster parents that are guardians of hers. They now work for the DEO, which is all storylines from the TV show. So really, that particular comic book, anyways, is heavily, heavily influenced by the TV show. And, you know, Arrow kind of a little bit. The New 52 Arrow really used the TV show as a guideline. In the comic books, in the Marvel comic books, you've got characters like Jessica Jones. She had a sort of supporting character role in New Avengers. Now she's back to her roots and very much like the TV show, the Netflix show. So yeah, it's quite a bit influenced. But I mean, if you got a hit multimedia product like a TV show, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, some kid that watches Supergirl goes to the local comic shop and says, I really like this character. I'd like to continue reading her adventures. And you give her a comic book that's absolutely nothing like the TV show.
Yeah, it's going to kill it. So what does this mean for the smaller independent distributors, the small guys who don't have hit TV shows? What's going on with their books? How much of a readership do they have left?
I feel like Tony is segueing into one of the other things you're going to talk about, Marty.
Well, coincidentally, I've got...
I have no previous knowledge of that, by the way.
I've got retail market share value here, too, right? So this is a dollar market share. And keep in mind, DC books are $2.99, but some of them come out twice a month. Marvel books are typically $3.99. Image books are typically $3.50 to $3.99. Most of the independents are at that $3.99 price range.
Yeah.
So DC's got 36.
So nobody's got like a $5.99 comic.
Oh yeah, they do all the time. Like I just picked up my comics this Wednesday, and Darth Vader was Darth Vader was $5.99. And I also read a comic called Zombie Tramp. Don't judge. from Action Labs.
Does Zombie Tramp have any mini events?
It did. It was the Zombie Tramp Halloween special or something like that. Twice the thickness of Darth Vader, and it was $4.99. It was a buck cheaper, and it was twice as thick.
So why was Darth Vader so expensive?
Well, it was the last issue, so they knew that people were going to be interested,
right?
They
have to buy it.
So DC's getting 37% of the comic market share. Marvel's getting 31%. Image is getting 9%. So that's Walking Dead. That's all those guys. 9%.
Right.
So IDW Publishing is like 4.6, Dark Horse is 3, Boom Studios is 2, Titan is 1, Viz Media is 1, Onipress is 1, so it just goes down from there. I was quite surprised to find Dynamite at 0.9. I thought Dynamite would be higher than that with all of their properties.
Yeah, because Dynamite usually packs quite the punch. It should be a lot higher than that.
But, you know, I guess they don't have too much going on. So... yeah, like your independent comic books, like sure, people are saying we're reading more Image, we're reading more Image. The numbers don't bear that out, you know.
Right.
Like, Image is 9% of the market share.
But, I mean, it's hard to compete with DC, even for a company like Image, because, you know, you've got the Marvel Zombies. What happened to, like, the Marvel Zombies? Did they all just stop buying Marvel comics?
I don't know. Like, I thought you meant the Marvel Zombies.
Not the actual
comic.
Marvel Zombies, the fans who just buy everything Marvel no matter what.
Yeah, a lot of them are not picking up these little miniseries that they've got coming out. Like, instead of having a Thor book and a Spider-Man book and, you know, an Iron Man book, all of a sudden we have these alternate characters in those costumes, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like these little miniseries. Marvel just came out with a whole bunch of new books. They're all villains. Fool Killer got a book. Solo got a book. I don't even know who Solo is.
So they're rehashing really bad 80s and 90s John Byrne villains who lasted, you know, the odd issue here or there. Basically filler material, filler villains.
Yeah, it's just weird. Know? So like
less
I said,
filler, more killer.
I printed out a few.
Those are amazing looking graphs, by the way,
Marty. They're awesome graphs. I actually do this every really month, good. Which is kind of bad.
Just so everybody knows, these graphs are actually multicolored.
Of course they're multicolored. Yeah.
There's green and orange and blue
and red. Of course
there's
multicolored.
I think Martin goes above and beyond the average comic collector to figure out what he spends on comics.
He spent more time on those graphs than I spent reading comics this week.
Once the spreadsheet is created, you just put in a few numbers every month and this all auto-generates. So it's not that bad. But January 2016, 48% of my comic book pull list was Marvel. November 2016, 50% is DC. Marvel is... There's too many colors. 9.4%.
Too many colors.
I'm getting old. I can't read the numbers. So really, I mean, I got tired of the Amazing Spider-Man. I loved Amazing Spider-Man. I liked Superior Spider-Man. They were great books. Amazing Spider-Man comes out now. It's Peter Parker in charge of a multi-billion tech core company. He's got an armored suit that glows green in certain spots. He's got a car. He's got a African-American sidekick that sometimes fills in who's... not named Rhodey, but might as well be. Like, this is Iron Man. This isn't Spider-Man. So, where the New 52 kind of floundered because they weren't paying attention to the legacy of these characters, this is exactly what's happening at Marvel, you know?
But it's been, like, this has been going on. I guess the New 52 started, like, almost 5 years ago.
Yep.
But, because this has been going on at Marvel for a long time, too, with them just, like, switching up characters, doing... this, doing that, right?
Well, I think what the other thing is happening...
Is it just that now the breeders have reached the point where they're it's no longer something that they're like, oh, yeah, that's cool, let's try this out, and they're just like, no.
Yeah, they're less tolerant of it, you know? The super-duper event books. We're going to release this big, huge event book. It's going to be 6 issues long. Oh, issue 6 is so late that we're going to cut it in half and release half of it as issue 6 and half of it as issue 7. Oh, the big huge reveal that happens at the end of issue 7 has already taken effect in the rest of the books 2 months ago, so you already know what happened in that issue 7, and it just, people are tired of it. Now, the fact that DC's kind of knocking it out of the park with Rebirth, people are seeing an alternative. So instead of saying, oh, I'm going to putter through with this Spider-Man comic book that isn't really Spider-Man, I hear there's some nice stuff going on across the street, so let's see what's going on across the street. Hey, this Superman book's awesome. Hey, this Batman book's great. Hey, this new Superman book about a Chinese Superman is awesome. So they're spending their money there instead.
I also think that, like, the other day I was at work and somebody came up buying a graphic novel. It was an Image graphic novel. And so I started talking comics with them, and I was like, do you read anything from Rebirth? And they're like, yeah, for sure, it's great, I love it. And it wasn't a typical comic book fan. They're actually buying The Wicked and the Divine from Image, which is not a like typical book.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's kind of like a little bit of a out there book. And so maybe DC Rebirth is just appealing to more broadly to people, not just to specific DC fans.
Oh, exactly.
You know,
and like I said, it's, you know, you're watching as a kid, right, there's the Superman movie in the 70s. There's a Super Friends cartoon. There's Batman on Slurpee cups. There's the Batman 66. So in the mass media, quite a few of the DC characters had a bigger following than Marvel did for a little while. I mean, these new Marvel movies have really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
But before that, so people are familiar with Robin and Batman and Superman and Shazam and all this stuff. So they're going into this new DC Rebirth, just like the whole reason for starting up new number ones is to build up hype.
Yeah.
Well, people are buying into that hype, and they're actually going and looking at these books, and they're just better. You know, the price point is better. Now, some people are saying, yeah. Oh, wait, you got to buy two a month, so it's not really $2.99. Yeah, it's $2.99 for 20 pages every 2 weeks, so that's $6 mm-hmm. for 40 pages of art, or I can go $3.99 for 22 pages at Marvel for the same month.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the same thing. Marvel's coming out with Thor, and now they're coming out with the Unworthy Thor.
Yeah,
so there's
going to
be
right.
two Thor books. There you've got Nova, and they're coming out with another Nova book. So there's going to be two Nova books. There's multiple X-Men books. There's multiple Avengers books. So really, if you want to know what's happening to the core X-Men team, you got to get three different issues
yeah.
just to follow your favorite characters, because they made sure they put the key characters in each book, spread it out so that you'd have to buy all three.
I'll steal your thunder, because I saw a comment you made on a Facebook page where you're like, at least with these two comics from Batman, say, you're getting two comics that are in one story instead of having to buy five comics you don't want just to follow part of the story.
Oh, exactly.
So,
like Marvel came out with that, was it the Black Initiative or the Dark? It was the one crossover with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was six different comics. And if you didn't get all six issues, you were lost. And it was two issues per title. So you're reading Guardians of the Galaxy 1 through whatever it was, 13. And all of a sudden comes issue 14, which made no sense. Issue 15 made no sense because you weren't getting the rest. So you felt like you just wasted your money those 2 months because you didn't yeah. really get the story. I think it was actually around issue 18. Somebody's going to fact check me on that. But
so it's just a cheap ploy to get you have to buy other comics
exactly.
that you don't really want.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And people are tired of that crossover nonsense.
But
as well.
You want to know something, to get tired of it and then the company stop? And, you know, this isn't the first time the big companies have done it. People too readily forget. History repeats itself.
Oh, absolutely.
Makes the same mistakes.
Absolutely. Like, you take a look at the variant cover nonsense that's going on right now. Like, Star Wars number one had, what, 100 and something variants?
It had too many variants. Just put it that right? way. Too many.
The,
doesn't matter the number.
The new Harley Quinn comic that came out. 67 variants, I think it was, of the number one. Now, I've got one or two of them because I like that particular artist.
Yeah.
But to actually go out and artificially inflate your numbers with that many variants, that's crazy.
And just like we were talking about last week when Sam kept interrupting by shouting out Marvel 2-in-1 titles he would like to see, Marvel is, to try and get some of their market share back or whatever, doing more of that stuff where you have to buy 300% more of a title than you normally would have for this other title, and you'll get something special. So,
well, that's Marvel's new plan to try to get back market share, is these new books that are coming out, you can only order X number of books if the month previous and the 2 months previous you ordered X number of some title that wasn't doing particularly well.
Yeah.
So if you want all these variants of this new title that's coming out, you got to buy a whole bunch of these books that aren't. Well, that's creating an artificial demand. Those books are just going to be sitting there at the comic shop, wasting time, paper. Like, I remember we were at Big B in Hamilton, and they had the Amazing Spider-Man number one right after Superior Spider-Man. And there were hundreds of copies.
Yeah.
Hundreds of copies. This is a year later, hundreds of copies. You know, they couldn't give them away. But, you know, if they made their money selling the variants, so what? So, I mean, that's just the way it is. Anyways, so that's kind of like the sales marketing state of the union address there. What else have we got?
It's still exciting to see that DC is performing well.
Oh, for sure. And I'm just really enjoying the books. Like, Superman, every 2 weeks, knocking it out of park. It's
yeah.
just, you're reading the book and you're sitting there going, that's my Superman. That is exactly how I would expect Superman to act. That's exactly what I want to see. That's exactly how I want to see him interacting with Batman. This is the character I'm familiar with and I enjoy. And the whole reason why I have Superman under ruse. Not, you know, Iron Spider-Man.
Man, I miss under ruse. Sometimes I bid on him in auctions. Just because I want Boba Fett under ruse again.
There you go. I've got a slight confession to make. I purchased my underwear from Walmart, and they have superhero underwear.
Really?
Yeah. I don't have a pair of plain underwear in my collection.
Listen, I got a pair of Star Wars boxer briefs for Christmas one year. It's the best. The Death Star is actually located.
Marty's taking his pants off.
Located right on the ass.
I'm not sure if I got Kermit or Homer on right now.
Right. But the Death Star is on the ass of these boxer briefs, and the clashed lightsabers are right over where my junk is.
There you go.
It doesn't get any better than that if you're a Star Wars geek. Really, it doesn't.
We were walking downtown. We saw a whole bunch of downtown Kingston, and there's a shop that sells nothing but socks and underwear and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was like a specialty shop. All these amazing Star Wars socks in the window, like just ones that look like X-Wing fighters and Boba Fett and stuff. It was pretty neat. It's kind of interesting. We were just talking about this, me and Tony, that back when Batman came out in 1989, Eaton's at Peterborough Square, for those that remember Eaton's, let alone remember Peterborough Square.
Does Eaton still exist as a chain?
No. They went
gone,
belly
eh?
up. Yeah.
Right.
But Eaton's had a whole bunch of Batman t-shirts for sale in correspondence with the movie coming out. And we bought a bunch, of course, because you just could not buy comic book geekery.
Yeah.
I mean, internet didn't exist, really. So if you wanted that sort of stuff, you were sending a self-addressed stamped envelope, for people who remember what those are, and ordering something in, or you were taking the trek to Toronto to pick something up from the Silver Snail. So I remember buying these t-shirts thinking, this is the cat's pajamas. This is great. Nowadays, Shoppers Drug Mart is selling superhero stuff. Like, it's just all over the place.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the cool things, like, working where I work in a music video retail store, you know, and seeing the explosion of superhero stuff over the past 4 or 5 years. You know, like, we have so many t-shirts. We literally sell dozens of superhero t-shirts a day.
Hey, do you get an employee discount, Dan? Does that extend to your friends who might let you hold, you know, a Tales of Suspense 39?
Perhaps if I hold a Tales of Suspense 39.
The only problem is the dance store is much like your tattoo parlor. They do not cater to the larger framed man.
Oh.
They do not have shirts in husky.
Do you really want me to get you a husky size shirt that says I got poked by Tony there, Marty?
Hello. Hello, sailor.
Yeah.
So what have you got on the table there, Dan?
Well, I had something to talk about, if I can stumble through it with my awful voice.
Yeah, it's
but
all
it's
good.
It's the new project coming out this coming Tuesday from Gord Downie and Jeff Lemire. They have a album / graphic novel coming out.
Yeah, and I heard about that.
Yeah, like I was checking it out. I actually thought it was out today and went to the store to buy it, but it wasn't out today, so I felt a bit like an idiot, but I'll definitely pick it up on Tuesday. And it's so Gord recorded a solo album about 3 years ago, and it's a sort of concept album following the story of a native boy who was taken away from his home to a residential school, and then he escaped and tried to get back home and died while on the road back home. And so he had written some poetry about this and took that to Jeff Lemire, who is a, you know, fairly well-known Canadian artist and
yeah,
writer.
For sure.
And they created this sort of multimedia package that's an album and a graphic novel to accompany the album, sort of detailing the story of this kid, and sort of Gord's trying to shed some light on some of the things that haven't been so great in Canada's history that sort of get swept under the rug, like all the residential schools and stuff that have been around.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I remember he was talking about that on an interview, and it's kind of weird because I think the timing's a little off, because Margaret Atwood just released her graphic novel, and it seems like it's like, oh, so I guess because comic books are popular, everybody's going to write a graphic novel?
Now, you might think that, but it's actually timed exactly because the real-life child who this is based off of died 50 years ago next Saturday.
Well, there you go. So
it was timed specifically for that sort of anniversary.
Yeah. It's Yeah, and the Orange Shirt campaign just happened there a weekend ago or 2 weekends ago, which, you know, this is a very symbolic thing for that also.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
throwing that in there.
Yeah, for sure. So what format is this graphic novel? Is it like a hardcover book that goes with the record, or can it get it separately? So
it comes in two formats. There's a deluxe LP set that's the album on LP with the graphic novel, and I believe that's a hardcover version there. Or you can also get just a regular like soft cover graphic novel right. that comes with a download code to get the album digitally
oh, cool.
to go along with it. Well, and all the proceeds from the sales go to the Gord Downie Secret Path Fund for Truth and Reconciliation, which is going towards, you know, helping out with these kind of situations, doing whatever they can.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. It's out on Tuesday. I'm definitely going to, I kind of snuck a preview thanks to my work at the graphic novel and, read through a few pages. So, and Jeff Lemire, he's pretty good. Like, I like his
oh, yeah. He's got a
very
stuff.
Distinctive art style when he's doing the art.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, did you ever read Sweet Tooth?
I haven't read Sweet Tooth, and I bought the trade paperback of Underwater Welder, but yeah. I haven't gotten to it yet. It's sitting on my rack of Canadian comics I haven't read with Margaret Atwood's hardcover. So,
what about Essex County?
I did.
Didn't
read,
you recommended read, that to me, yeah. but I haven't bought it yet.
I read a quarter of it. Yet.
I think I drove through Essex County once.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, my pile of trade paperbacks that need to be read is quite mighty and quite large. There's a lot of books that I'm far, far, far behind on.
It's funny, Marty, because I've heard you say my rack of Canadian comics a couple of times, and it always makes me think, you know, how different our racks of Canadian comics truly are, because my rack at home is, you know, all 1940s. Yeah. Canadian comics.
No, mine's a shelf full of trade paperbacks from Canadian creators.
There's a lot of Captain Canuck.
There's some Captain yeah. Canuck, but no, we got the Nelvana reprint that the gals came out with.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Canuck is there.
Right.
A lot of the Jeff Lemire stuff. Cerebus is on that shelf.
Nice. You gotta love Cerebus.
The John Bell book, I've got that yeah. on there.
You Invaders know, so, from the North.
Yeah, and there's that fellow. Oh gosh, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I'll butcher it. I'm very bad at French.
Cara.
Who does stuff out of Quebec? He does sort of like multimedia stuff. So he has got a lot of characters doing. I think it's Heroes of the North. It's called or something to that effect. So he's got like a web series, comic books. Hmm. He's got models showing up as cosplayers. They got statues, figures. So I've got right. quite a few of his trade paperbacks there too. Hmm. So, yeah, it's just my shelf of Canadian content. It's not, you know, there's some historic stuff there. There's some nice stuff,
right.
but it's not quite a Canadian white collection.
Yeah. Well, not everybody has a Canadian white collection. Things are so damn rare. There's a Facebook page for this radio show, right?
Yes.
I'll tell you what, Marty. Sometime next week, you upload your rack of Canadian comics, and I'll upload my rack
right.
of Canadian we'll comics on the same post. Yeah, we're going to compare racks, people.
Compare racks.
Tune in later for that.
There you go. Yeah. Just a preview. Tony's rack is much, much nicer than mine.
I got an original vintage early 60s mint condition Gold Key Comics comic rack. This thing is rarer than any Dell rack. It's probably just as rare as the 1930s DC comic book rack, which there are like probably five of in existence.
Yeah.
I've marketed this rack out to some heavy hitters in the comic industry who have just looked at the picture and said, "Holy shit."
Yeah, I've seen two Gold Key comic racks in the past like month, and they're all at antique malls, and all of them have big huge stickers on it saying "not for sale." I'm like, but what do you mean not for sale?
Are they different than the one I have?
Oh, more than likely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're probably the later 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
But the gold, actually, picture the Gold Key.
Yeah, the one that I saw has the logo on it, yeah. not the actual picture. But it's black and sort of almost like a bronzy plaque on it, not quite gold.
Right.
And it's like a wall-mounted unit.
Yeah.
And then the other one I saw just has like two legs at the back kind of post up.
Oh, the trifold one. Yeah, trifold. Yeah.
But yeah, spinner racks, that's always a fun thing.
Oh, spinner racks are great. Dan, you got a spinner rack at home?
I do not.
No.
Dan, I don't think Dan ever bought a comic book off of a spinner rack.
No, I never. I don't think I did either. But Tony's rack's probably worth more than my entire collection. So
Tony's rack's so amazing, its nipples are pierced.
Yeah.
So, Tony.
Yes.
As our resident golden age Canadian white expert here.
I'm not an expert. I just know some stuff.
You just know some stuff. Yeah, yeah. You're just one of the five guys who knows all this stuff.
Yeah, I guess.
How's that price guide coming?
Well, the price guide is finished. Now it's sitting in limbo while a certain publisher is talking to us about maybe we should market it Overstreet and get them to jump on board. And it's a bunch of red tape, unfortunately, this moment. But if anybody would like a secret copy of it, I could gladly photocopy it and mail it to you for, say, $15. Cover my cost of paper and envelope and stamp postage, you know.
Digital. You gotta hand out the digital copy, the PDF.
It seems wrong to have a golden age thing that you're doing digitally.
Look. Yeah, I agree.
There you go.
But the pricing data is complete. Some of the other information is complete. It's just, it's all tied up in publisher limbo.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not going to get released this year like we had hoped. The unnamed publisher at this moment, who I don't, you know, I'm not talking bad about anybody.
Wow, stuff happens, right?
Yeah, so, there's been some stumbling blocks, unfortunately.
Schedules, things happen.
And yeah,
I think also, you know, we're trying to be coy here because we like this publisher quite a bit. We like their material, we like their content, we want them to succeed. But in the same kind of vein, it's almost like it's being run as a part-time operation. And they need some full-time staff. They need to actually take it to the next level. And
they do, definitely. I agree with that, Marty. It's just, you know, it's a bit of a letdown because it is the 75th anniversary of Canadian Comics in Canada. You know, it would have been great to have this price guide coincide with that. It doesn't seem to have quite the same effect if it's the 76th anniversary or the 77th.
No matter when it comes out, you guys should still have that Canada 75 logo on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it comes out, you know, 3-4 months into 2017 or whatever.
We'll have 8 or 9 logos on it. Don't worry. You know, we're going to market it however we can. My main emphasis of the project was always the information, you know. Yeah. None of us are going to make any money at
That's cool.
Price guide, that's for sure. I'll be lucky if I see $5. But I'll be selling. I'm going to get some personal copies. I'll be selling signed ones, you know, to my friends.
Yeah, there you go.
For $14.99.
Now, for any listeners that don't know what a Canadian white is, give us a quick synopsis on what a Canadian white is and what this price guide's all about.
Okay, well, you got the Overstreet price guide, which sometimes correctly reflects true market trend values of comic books. The Canadian White Price Guide is going to do that for what we lovingly call Canadian Whites. Canadian Whites started in the 40s during the war when there were embargoes on trading with our neighbor to the south, the States, paper and other valued goods for the war effort. It's Canadian publishers, since American comics were no longer allowed to come into Canada, Canadian publishers filled the void and created their own comics. The first couple of them are actually in color. And a Canadian created Iron Man, kids. I hate to burst your bubble.
Yep.
It's a true story.
Iron Man came out in Canada first.
That's right.
Now, that was also like the very first time that there was Canadian comic books.
Or yeah, Canadian Better Comics, number one.
By Canadian creators.
Creators, that's right.
Published in Canada.
So after the first couple of issues of some of these titles, they started producing them in black and white because it was cheaper, so hence the term Canadian Whites.
There you go. So, and, you know, I've got... Overstreet is Overstreet. Overstreet is the yearly price guide that comes out. I haven't bought a copy in a decade because with the advent of the internet and eBay and Kijiji and all these online heritage auctions, the pricing seems to change far more rapidly than an annual publication can come out.
Yes, it does.
But your Canadian White's price guide, because that market seems to be a little bit more stable, not quite as affected by silly things like, oh, this guy's going to be in this movie, so the comic jumps up. So
yeah, that will never happen.
So your price guide, I think, even though it's only, you know, like a printed coming out, you've already got prices in, I don't think those prices are going to change tremendously. So it's still going to be pretty accurate.
It will be accurate to a degree. Because of the rarity and scarcity of Canadian whites, sometimes they jump drastically when they hit the open marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, the recent Comic Link auctions, a graded 1.5, a joke 3, hit 3,400 American.
But there's some I won't say suspicion, but there's some speculation that this was like a new Canadian whites collector with a deep pocketbook picking up some stuff to start a collection.
Marty, what were you doing
that isn't the same speculation I've actually been privy to, Marty.
What it's, speculation have you been privy to if you want to divulge?
It's actually a select group of deep-pocketed American collectors who are snatching up the recent sales of Canadian whites, the availability of them on Comic Link. So the few Canadians who collect these, who have the resources to obtain them, are now fighting with American collectors. And, you know, they get pretty punchy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the final seconds of the auction ring.
Oh, exactly.
You know, you watch books jump from 1,800 U.S. to 4,800 U.S. in a matter of 4 seconds, and you're sitting there going, oh, my God, I'm glad I didn't enter my max bid at 29. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So, and this is where it gets even harder to collect them if you're all of a sudden competing against the majority of the American Golden Age collector.
Well, that's because these things are honest to goodness scarce.
Oh,
like you're talking 5 copies of a book, 10 copies of a book,
yeah,
in existence.
Exactly.
This is Action Comics rarity. Mm-hmm. Action Comics number one rarity.
Even it's even worse than Action Comics number one rarity. The highest, whichever Canadian white it is that has the most copies around, whether it's an Anglo or a Maple Leaf or a Bell, you're talking there's maybe max like 50 issues.
Yeah. Still in 50. Existence.
That's half of what's rumored for Action Comics number one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they'll never reach the proportion standards of Action Comics number one, fortunately. But in its own right, some of the Nelvana books are jumping up there, and she's a female superhero.
One of the first females.
That superheroes. Predates Wonder Woman.
There you go.
How can you go wrong with that?
Yeah.
At Fan Expo, I saw there was a guy selling a Nelvana slab. It was like Triumph 23 or something, so
right.
It wasn't even like a really early appearance
yeah.
of her. 0.5, incomplete. It was slabbed, and it was 450 American.
Yeah. So that's about 700 Canadian.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So for an incomplete book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, try finding a complete one.
I can't even afford an incomplete one.
So is that why these Americans are jumping on this bandwagon? Is because, you know, they've pretty much collected everything there is to collect on their end of things, and now they're looking at this saying, hey, this is something interesting?
Well, yes and no. There's, you know, it depends on what you're into for collecting, especially with comics. You know, there's Golden Age collectors who only collect scarce. You know, they don't even have any complete runs of any certain title. They're just after the scarce issues. It's Golden Age collectors who collect war covers, motorcycle covers, underwater covers. So, but for like most general Golden Age collectors will probably stay away from these. They may go after one issue to say they have one of something that's scarce. You know, and that's cool to do. It's fighting against the guys who are after scarce stuff because most of the time they tend to be doctors or lawyers, you know, guys who are bringing in 5 figures every month.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to compete against them is really hard. So, but yeah, it's an interesting hobby and you're an interesting book to obtain. It's a mini event in my household when I managed to acquire one, let me tell you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Actually, I think it's a mini earthquake. So,
at least, like you know, as you're saying, these things are so scarce, but it's nice that we're getting the reprints of Nelvana, Johnny Canuck, like we were talking about.
Yes.
That, you know, because I will never be able to afford probably a golden white book unless, or sorry, Canadian white book, unless I sell my entire collection. But I can still read Nelvana.
Well, yes and no. A lot of the Anglos still go for reasonable prices, Dan. You can pick up an Anglo, a later issue Anglo American for, you know, 100 to 150 American.
Yeah.
You know, so it is within your grasp. You know, I've got about 50 of those at home that you can buy if you want any day now.
Well, we'll talk. We'll talk sometime. So they're not all out of the grasp, but just the, like, because this one was obviously a rare book that went for a lot.
Yes. A lot of the emphasis.
Sorry, did you say that you have a copy of this book?
Oh, of Joke Number 3? Yeah. Mine's a very good plus. It's probably the highest, it's probably the best grade condition of any surviving ones left.
So you probably have the best copy of this comic book in
the world. Yeah, quite possibly.
Sweet.
Yeah, there might be one out there somewhere buried, forgotten about, yeah, that maybe like a half a grade better. A lot of these books are not in good condition because for sure, the poor publishing process, the inks used, the cheap, shoddy paper used, mm-hmm, you know, so a lot of them didn't survive. And, you know, kids tossed them and read them and folded them and handed them each other. And
even,
you know,
Sam.
Yeah. Even Sam to this day still does that.
And there was some war drives and stuff on.
Yeah, war drives, paper. And the publishers themselves, hey, kids, return two of these books for a new issue.
Yeah.
You know, Bell was famous for that because he realized into so many issues that, geez, I haven't kept any for myself. And he used to run contests on the inside covers with the coupons there.
Yeah.
Kids to cut the coupons out. You find Canadian whites with big square chunks missing out of the middle of the cover. It's awesome. Yeah. That just tells me that comic was loved.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, somebody said that there's a cowboy drawing you fill in on Action Comics number one, and if you colored them in, you send it in, you'd get Action Comics number two. So there's quite a few Action Comics number ones with that missing. And
quite possibly,
that happened a lot.
Popular culture would get so big 70 years later and that these funny little pieces of paper would be worth so much and so highly sought and treasured by adults and kids alike.
Well, that same thing happens with all the sort of collector memorabilia and stuff. I mean, I was just talking to a fellow on the Star Wars action figure news group, and they were talking about, you know, using hydrogen peroxide to take away the yellow aging in the cheap plastic that was used in these toys, and, you know, the bubbles are all falling apart, and like the toy was not invented, just like the comic book was not designed to last 100 years. It was, it was simple entertainment for, in the comic book case, let the kid get 10 cents worth of entertainment value, trade it with his friends, and away you go. You'd roll that sucker up in your back pocket and away you go. So, yeah, it's interesting for sure. What else we got?
What else do
anybody,
you got?
Anybody read anything good? So you guys are collectors, not readers, so we can't even discuss. Like,
well, no, listen, not every comic I buy is slabbed. I buy a lot of Golden Age that's raw, and I read it.
Yeah, but you're reading.
Like, trust me, when you spend some of the money I do on comics, you want to read that.
Oh, somebody asked me the same thing, that if you ever bought, like, something fancy, like Action Comics number one, I'd read the darn thing. There's no way I wouldn't
read
it.
Very carefully, though.
Very carefully. Yeah, exactly. But I'd read the thing. I mean, like you said, if you're going to spend that much money on it, why wouldn't you read it?
Yeah. Oh. If I had, you know, $450,000 to buy a low-grade Action number one, you're damn right I would read it.
There you go. Everybody's trying not to sneeze or cough.
I'm trying to find you a picture of some Canadian whites here, Dan. Well, that one's $314 Canadian. It's a nice mid-grade Grand Slam number 54.
Yeah, so I suppose if I save a little bit.
Well, it just depends on how you want to.
I actually
don't
spend that much money on ridiculous comics anymore. So
2016 seems to be the year of austerity. I mean, everybody was buying like crazy last year, and everybody seems to be cutting back and this year.
We're paying for it now.
We're paying for it this year.
Those bills came in.
I know. I'm in that boat. Everybody jokes about 2015 Marty spending and 2016 Marty like pinching pennies, but that's the way it is. That's the way it is.
I pinch pennies so I can spend.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, collector or not, I mean, there's some new stuff coming out. I don't know if you guys are interested in it or not, but I guess Marvel announced their new Resurrection with an X. Resurrection. Okay.
Right.
So after the event,
season two, Resurrection.
Well, this goes back to what we were saying before about how the TV shows sometimes influence things. Marvel's right. got this big push for Inhumans, right? They're not pushing the X-Men because that's owned by a different studio, the film rights.
Right.
So they push this Inhumans agenda.
Hey, so if you got two comics sitting on top of each other, one's Resurrection, you cover the R with the other one. Is it going to, like, say, Resurrection?
More than likely.
Direction.
There you go.
So, yeah.
More than likely. But so Marvel's been pushing the Inhumans as a alternative to the mutants. And this is all coming to a head in Marvel's little mini series there. What is it? I versus X or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
Honestly, I'm not following Marvel at all, so I'm behind the times. But that series hasn't even come out yet, and they've already announced the sequel to it. Called Resurrection, and the X is the X-Men logo, and one of the other symbols has black bolts, lightning bolts in it. So there is some sort of a Inhumans X-Men sequel that's going to, like, bring them all back in some sort of harmonious
detail. Unless the first series bombs in sales, then Marvel's not putting out the second series.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to come out with the second series because they got to relaunch the X-Men comic book, the Uncanny X-Men comic book, the Extraordinary X-Men, the Uncanny Avenger X-Men. Then they got to come out with the Inhumans, the Uncanny Humans, the Extraordinary Humans, the Incredible Inhumans.
Yeah. And why do they do all these stupid relaunches? Whatever happened to having, you know, 15 titles with solid writers and artists on each one and producing good stuff? Like, look at DC. They've relaunched this number one, like, what, 29 times in 4 years? Like,
wow. Well,
that just speaks
in 4 years,
losers to me.
Marvel's been doing the same thing.
Comic book losers. Well, so is Marvel.
You know, like, there's 16 Captain America number ones.
Kids, go on the hunt for Cerebus back issues. Great solid storyline and art. The two Daves rock.
Oh, Cerebus. I love those phone books. They come out with trade paperbacks of the Cerebus.
Yeah.
Thick bad boys.
Canadian style phone books.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing stuff. But so, you know, the X-Men apparently are going to be coming back, but the mutants are still going to be there. You know, we're waiting for some kind of a big announcement.
I thought the X-Men were mutants.
Yeah, the X-Men are mutants. The Inhumans are not mutants. They're from another planet.
They're Inhumans.
Yeah, with DNA mixed with...
Mutants or other Inhumans?
I don't know, man. I'm telling you, I'm not following it at all. And then, of course, there was a big announcement. You know, Darth Vader, the Star Wars Darth Vader book is ending. We're going to come out with a new ongoing Star Wars series. It's a big secret. We're not going to tell you what it is.
And but it's Star Wars.
It's Star
That's
Wars
all you
based.
Need to know.
It's ongoing. Well, they announced it, and it's some sort of supporting character from the Darth Vader comic book is getting her own book. And I was like, whoop-dee-doo. Like, of all the characters to give an ongoing series to, we're giving it to... Now,
is it that archaeologist girl?
Yeah, it's the doctor, whatever, from Darth Vader.
Right.
Armalala or Armidala. Andalrelia. Somebody's going to...
Armageddon, somebody's, Resurrection, Erection.
Somebody's going to nail me on Twitter that I don't know that one. But again, I'm not following it all. But of all the characters to give a full, like a brand new ongoing series to, why would they give it to this supporting character? It's not like... Like somebody once said, oh, well, that's because Marvel created that character. So Marvel owns the rights to that character so they can, like, push it as opposed to using one of their licensed characters. Dude, Disney owns Star Wars. Disney owns Marvel. Marvel owns Star Wars. Disney. It's all the same company. There's no licensing anymore.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they can't go forward with a Chewbacca book, a Han Solo book. Now, I know they tried minis, but... You know, an Admiral Ackbar miniseries. Tweedle would go nuts if they made an Admiral Ackbar series.
And maybe 8 or 9 other people.
Yeah, but why are they making this ongoing?
It's a trap.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you get the name there, Dan, or is it?
I
know
no,
I'm going to get in trouble for not knowing it, but Scotty D's going to get on my case over that one.
It's here somewhere, but
anyways, doesn't matter. So, I mean...
Scotty D, if you're listening, Marty's sorry. He really is. He's going to go home and cry.
Scotty's one of the moderators of a Facebook page called the Comic Book Curator, and he's a huge Star Wars comic fan, and that's pretty much the only modern books he's been buying for quite a few years is Star Wars.
That wasn't right. the girl from Darth Vader 3?
Her first issue was Darth Vader 4. That was her first appearance, was Darth Vader 4.
Scotty, if you want any Star Wars comics, I own them all. I'll gladly sell them all to you.
I'm pretty sure
all the Dark Horse
stuff. I'm pretty sure he owns them all as well.
Get a hold of me through Marty.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure he's got all of them. He's been collecting for quite a few years. Nothing but Star Wars books.
Just was perusing Bleeding Cool, and apparently they've already sort of... they had the new Iron Man series out featuring... a different person as Iron Man.
Yes.
Which takes
place Williams?
After Civil War 2 and spoils the end of
which hasn't
Civil
ended
War
yet.
2. Yeah.
Oh,
now, it's not out officially yet. It was preview copies sent out to retailers or something. But they've already spoiled, like, what happens to Tony Stark, possibly.
So they did that for Secret Wars.
Yeah, and didn't learn their lesson.
And now they spoiled it for Civil War 2. Like, honest to goodness.
So is Tony Stark still Iron Man?
Kinda.
I mean, I don't read any Marvel comics, so I can't say.
Be Iron Man.
I don't know what's happening, like, this week's issue, but in the future, there's a new girl named Riri Williams who is going to be taking up the Iron Man mantle. She's not called Iron Man. She's called something else.
She could be called Iron Girl.
She's going to be in the
Iron Woman.
No, like when Pepper Potts became Iron Man, they called her Rescue.
Oh, okay.
So I know that Riri's going to have some sort of a name. But
now, whatever. I would like to just quote the Bleeding Cool article. The final line is, will Marvel one day finish the event comic before the relaunch that is meant to spin out of it? No. End of article.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
And, of course, in ongoing nonsense, I don't know, Tony, whether you've followed the DC Comics TV shows or not.
A little bit. I really love The Flash.
Wild Dog is appearing in DC Comics. And Wild Dog, of course, is from the late 80s, and he was invented by, I'm trying to remember, I know it's Terry Beatty, and I should remember the other fellow, but I don't, so again, I'm going to get in trouble. For not having my facts straight. Max Allen Collins. So Max Allen Collins and Terry Beatty, not only did they create Miss Tree. I don't know if you remember the Miss Tree.
No, I do not.
But they created this character called Wild Dog. So Wild Dog is now in the TV show, and Terry took to Facebook.
Which DC TV show, though?
Arrow.
Okay.
He's going to be on an episode of Arrow.
I don't watch Arrow. Sorry. Yeah.
So Terry tweets, sure, it was a kick to see Wild Dog in action again on this week's episode of Arrow, and the media publicity is fun to see, too. On the other hand, I'm still waiting to hear word one from DC or Warner Brothers, and the amount I've been paid for use of this character I co-created still stands at not one thin dime. Kind of dampens the enthusiasm. Now, granted, you know, the character was created, worked for hire, he got his paycheck, he created it.
Yeah.
You know, and DC owns it, so if DC, but come on, cut the guy off a slice of the pie.
Well, it's funny, Tony Isabella, famous writer for DC and other companies, has been fighting with companies about that. Black Lightning. And he worked on Luke Cage for a while.
Yeah, when they decided to make the Super Friends cartoon, they intentionally created the character as Black Vulcan.
Yeah,
so they could avoid having to pay him.
So, but I think he's recently just won some settlement for his use of Luke Cage.
Yeah,
because he had something to do with that.
Hey, studios, if you're making big money, cut your creators off a slice. Come on. Don't make him go and sue you for this, that, or the other thing. Do the right thing. I know Paul Levitz, when he was president of DC, he would cut checks. But it seems like they've been reluctant to do so since he's not there anymore and it's a corporate culture. Anyways, I think our time's winding down here a little bit. I see Dan.
Our time and our voices.
I see Dan frantically ready to fire up a station ID. So I guess that's it for this week.
Sure.
All right. Next week, same bat time, same bat channel.
Do we have to pay for that?
No. I don't
think
so.
Yeah.
If so, who do we pay?
I don't know, but Sam will pay it.